Chapter 30. More Than We Imagined. Mark, we need someone to develop village airstrips in Tanzania. You have the experience. Would you be willing to do it? Mark Knight, one of our pilots, had been making landing strips and helping the AIM among the Turkana in Kenya's northern frontier district. I knew he worked well with national church leaders and was deeply concerned to get into needy areas. If he could encourage Tanzanians in even a few villages to start clearing airstrips, others would probably follow their example, and the idea could snowball. This was 1977, many years before our Good Samaritan scenario became a reality. We still had financial difficulties. But the work in Tanzania had grown. After leaving Ethiopia, the Kurkulas had started a more permanent base at Dodoma. Within 2 years, we had 5 pilots in Tanzania, plus engineer Roland Knight, who had served with us in Kenya, Chad, and Ethiopia. Bishop Madinda had caught the vision of village airstrips. Mark spent time with national leaders visiting villages to find landing areas. Local people proved enthusiastic and very willing to clear the ground. Other churches and missions had become interested when they saw how planes could help church growth. We soon realized that in a territory as large as Tanzania, one major base was not enough. Sub-bases were needed to reach such a widespread population. The Kurkulas moved on again to open our first sub-base at Mushi in 1979, and over the next 3 years, another 3 were established at strategic points around the country. They included one with the German Brethren in the extreme south, who had now become enthusiastic about using the plane for village outreach. It proved very effective for them. More and more ways were found of using our services. Soon after arriving in Moshi, the Kurkulas were called upon to provide regular flights, taking Bible teachers to the Sukumas around Lake Victoria. These teachers trained local evangelists to spread the gospel in neighbouring villages, which they did with such success that within a few months, 3,000 had become Christians and 56 new churches had been established. Later follow-up showed that almost all remained committed. Another call for MAF's help came from a German anaesthetist, Georg Kamm. He had learned of a secret formula developed by the US Space Agency for converting impure water to a pure intravenous fluid. He wrote direct to the president and obtained permission to use it. Hospitals in Tanzania, as in many African countries, could not afford the vital but costly intravenous fluids imported from Europe. Georg adapted this technique to produce units which could transform water even from dirty African boreholes into pure intravenous infusions at only 5% of the imported cost. There was one snag. Georg's units were shattered by rough road journeys. He called in MAF. We transported the delicate apparatus safely by air and helped to install it in distant bush hospitals. Altogether, 50 units were installed, and treatment for patients throughout Tanzania was transformed. It was an unusual and important contribution by MAF to the medical needs of the country. Other countries took up the idea. We were able to help in Tanzania in other ways too. Medical staff, flown in our planes, developed mobile clinics in a country too short of funds and medical personnel to provide anything like enough permanent fixed clinics. Thousands with no other hope of treatment were helped in this way. Similarly, eye diseases, so prevalent in that dusty atmosphere, were tackled by MAF eye safaris carrying ophthalmic surgeons. The Tanganyika Christian Refugee Service administrators also relied on MAF to speed them over long distances to areas of urgent need. Finally, major church leaders were enabled, for the first time, to coordinate and encourage the work of believers scattered throughout the country. Bishop Madinda saw with delight real spiritual revival among the semi-nomadic Maasai. They presented him with the ebony stick, which entitled him to authority and a hearing throughout the tribe. Asked how he would use it, he replied simply, "What else have I to tell them about but the love and salvation of Jesus?" At one stage, the very speed of growth brought its own problems. Staff were overloaded and overstrained. Three accidents in a single year put planes out of action, at a time when all our five planes could barely keep up with demand. Trust in our services was undermined by our inability to meet all the needs. Fortunately, this proved only a temporary setback. Eventually, a sixth plane was provided, repairs were completed, and activity increased yet again. Swede Tom Nyquist opened a much-needed aircraft radio servicing workshop at Dodoma. Before long, a fifth sub-base was opened too. Flying in Tanzania went up a further 20%. Many of our hopes for Tanzania had now been realized. There was more effective penetration at village level. Christian workers were more ready to live in remote places because the plane was available. MAF was able to maintain the bird's eye view of what was happening throughout the country and improve the coordination of Christian work. Perhaps most significantly of all, as in Ethiopia and elsewhere, the indigenous churches, rather than expatriate missionaries, had now become MAF's major customers. 20 years before, our three children, Becky, John, and Priscilla, had looked down with fascination as our Cessna circled over the volcanic rim of a 10,000-foot mountain. It was one of the rare Cessna flights we were able to do together as a family. We were on our way from Nairobi to Dodoma. Slight wisps of smoke came up from the glowing red center of the crater. The dark sides of the mountain fell away sharply to the Maasai's step below. The people living on those dusty scrubland plains called the mountain Oldoinyolengai, Mountain of God. Now, in 1985, another MAF Cessna flew over Oldoinyolengai. Its two passengers were Maasai elders, one of them a wizened chief called Kuraru. He peered intently through the plane's window, his deep-set eyes scanning every detail of the mountain from this unusual viewpoint. The month before, the pilot, Peter Empson, now back in MAF, had been sitting in the dusty sand of the Maasai village of Manik, talking to the people crowded around. Further back were herds of lean cattle and goats. Bushflies were everywhere. 20 miles away to the south rose the sombre outline of Oldoinyolengai. Peter had landed at Monique with Pastor Lemachon, himself a Maasai. But outsiders were not welcome to these independent, semi-nomadic people. Kuraru had pointed to the distant volcano. "Our god Kambogeo lives on the top of that mountain. He is angry with the plane's coming. He will cause it to crash." An idea suddenly struck Peter. "Would any of you like to fly over the mountain with me?" No one moved. The offer of a car trip would probably have been refused, let alone a flight in a plane. But the following month, Kuraru and another elder agreed to go. Peter went to get the plane ready, radioed the MAF base at Dodoma, and told them, "I'm going now. Please pray for us." "The air is likely to be turbulent around the crater," he thought rather anxiously, as the Cessna neared the lip of the crater. "If it is, the chief may say their god is showing his anger by shaking the plane." Praying hard, he gently eased the aircraft over the mountaintop and started to circle it. Below was the crater, sunlit and calm. Kuraru could see it clearly. That day, there was not even a wisp of smoke, let alone a gleam of red, only some blackened vegetation. There was no turbulence. The plane landed back at Monique. As the people crowded round, the old chief got out and turned to them. "No god lives there in the mountain. The top looks just like scorched grass," he told Peter on a later visit. "All I saw was just a mountain. Not a goat, cow, sheep, or anything else alive there. I knew then that no god lived there. I now believe in your god." He went further. "I was sick, and I prayed in the evening that God would make me well. I woke in the night and found myself talking to God, and I felt God healing me. We need the teachers and the medical help you bring." The plane was always welcome at Monique after that. The change in Kuraru made it possible to reach other Maasai villages too. More airstrips were made, and Tanzanian pastors and evangelists spent weeks patiently sharing the harsh way of life of these nomadic people. MAF flew a young German nurse into another remote area among the Maasai. She lived among them, won their confidence and esteem, and has been greatly used by God. Hers is an epic story of its own. A real hunger for teaching arose as Maasai turned to God. With eager smiles, they learned Christian songs. It would have been unthinkable before. The hard work to reach them had all been worthwhile. Throughout Tanzania, the church continued to grow, though there still remained much to do. There was an openness to the gospel. People were healed and freed from the influence of evil spirits. "It's often just simple faith," one of our pilots said. "A pastor or evangelist will pray for a sick person, and healing comes." Evangelism was a part of everyday church life. People didn't need urging to witness to their faith. It just came naturally. The churches were also deeply involved with community projects. They saw them as a practical way of sharing God's love. They helped in water schemes, farm improvement plans, schools, clinics, and hospitals. MAF was a partner with them, flying them to places of need and opportunity. The plane attracted people. They took special notice of the witness of those it brought. "People who come by plane must have a real concern for us," they reasoned. When Jack Hemmings and I had made our slow, dispirited way back to Nairobi across those dusty plains of Tanzania after the Gemini crash, we could not have foreseen such a future. When, as a family, we'd flown over Oldonyolengai, I had no inkling of how God was going to use MAF there. Even when we had first resurveyed Tanzania in 1976 and our initial staff had arrived, we still hadn't realized the full potential. "He is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine," says St. Paul.